Emergency Medical Care Committee, how, let's get started. It's a little after nine. If the committee members wouldn't mind looking at the minutes, if I could get some approval for the minutes from last month.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Very good. All right. Moving on, oh, let's quickly just introduce ourselves from left to right.
Hi, I'm Ron Blau, representing First District.
Good morning, Patrick Powers, representing Second District.
Morning, Nick Annis, representing Third District.
John Gilway, representing the Fourth District.
Tammy McConnell, Orange County EMS.
Michelle Tom, Society of Emergency Medicine.
Wolfgang Canabi, Orange County Fire Chiefs Association.
Dean Gross, representing the California League of Cities.
Sharon Hoyer, representing Orange Coast Emergency Nurses Association.
Monica Ruzic, representing the American Red Cross.
Jim Karras, representing AMSA Association of Orange County, and I'm not yet confirmed for the committee.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Moving on to the first item, Orange County EMS report.
I'll take that. First thing I want to start off with right off the bat is just to provide a brief update to the 911 emergency ambulance RFP. The procurement process has concluded and the award recommendations were presented to the board last week. At that time, the board voted to delay the award until Vice Chair Bartlett and Supervisor Steele had a chance to convene an ad hoc committee and collaborate with State Senator Bates to consider some legislative options. The board meets in special session at a special meeting this Tuesday on the 28th to hear the item again. So that's our next milestone, and really that's a big decision point in the saga of the ambulance RFP. On a lighter note, Sidewalk CPR is June 4th this year, and it's an annual American Heart Association initiative that's in place to increase awareness and public interest in hands-only CPR. This year, our office is making an effort to really try and get our providers engaged, and we will be sending out an announcement about the beginning of May to kind of kick it off. What's happening in May of this year, May 17th through the 23rd, is EMS week. The theme is EMS strong. I don't have any, I haven't heard about any efforts yet, but I know that they're out there to celebrate this. So stay tuned on that. We do have a diversion report. It's for quarter 2014. I don't have Mike speak to that, and then also anything related to policies and procedures.
Tammy, I just had one question on the RFP. A legislative fix, I just had a question on that, what that means. And secondly, this is the RFP that we had one that was done and then it was rescinded because for some reason. This is the second one that was done and awarded and went to the supervisors. Is that correct?
So what that means legislatively, I can't answer. That's something that was going to go on between the supervisor and the senator on what potential options legislatively they could make, and I don't know what those options were that they were to pursue. This is the second go around in the evaluation of the same bid that was submitted. So we had one RFP released on May 19th, 2014, in which bids were received. They were evaluated and scored. The decision, then there was a decision made by healthcare agency to cancel the entire RFP process and start from scratch. Shortly thereafter, the board rescinded the cancellation and reset the RFP back to the scoring. So what happened was new evaluation panels were convened with totally different members to evaluate the bids that were submitted on May 19th. And so that ended the end of February, I think March, and it was those panel recommendations that were sent to the board for consideration.
Thank you. And at the April 28th, they're going to decide if it's going to go forward. They're going to approve it, or is that the meeting on the 28th?
Yeah, we have up there, what healthcare agency is presenting is the recommendations to award for each region and then the named providers. You know, and how it works is they don't have to approve the whole entire document. They can pick and choose which ones they want to go. So it's possible that they'll approve some and not all, or all and then we move on. So
thank you.
Mm-hmm. An additional question. Tammy, I've been able to read a communication from the county. It looked like it was going to the city managers that was explaining the process. And I commend the county for making sure that they communicate with the cities, because I think it's important the cities feel as though their voice is included in this competitive process. My question is specifically regarding county-administered areas. There seems to be a lot of confusion as I talk to city council people about what is a city county-administered zone and what is a city-administered zone. And there also seems to be quite a bit of confusion regarding a statement of 201 rights. So can you explain what it means for a county-administered zone?
I will try my best and refer you to the 286-page EMS plan, but the very, very end has a couple of tables, and it illustrates the difference between those cities that are county administered versus those cities who are currently city administered. County administered areas are those areas where the county is responsible for the contracting of the ambulance transport. You know, this hedges on the 201 right issue, and I'd rather not get into that and convolute it, because for purposes of this ambulance RFP, those 19 cities are not even considered to be eligible to say that they have 201 rights, because they were not organized incorporated cities until well after the EMS Act was in place in 1980. So those are there's not a question of whether or not those areas they don't have 201 rights.
Okay, so there's no question in those zones, but there seems to be, well, it appears as though there's more confusion in other zones, and it must be vetted out, I guess. Chief Kanabe, you said there's some sort of possible statutory fix that may be coming that will iron out that particular issue of who's responsible for this zone?
Correct. There's a committee, Chapter 13 Task Force at the state level, that's looking to do some legislative fix, or at least identify exactly what's what. The Attorney General actually came out with a letter, I believe about 2 months ago, that spoke to 201 and what 201 is, and basically identified, as of 1980, if you are providing for or contracting for those services, you have those 201 rights. And you keep those 201 rights until you affirmatively give them up with the county, with the LEMSA. In other words, you write a letter to the LEMSA saying, we want no more responsibility for this. And it has to be an affirmative move. It can't be an implied move. And so that, in fact, I can get the Attorney General's opinion, and I'm sure you have it, Tammy. If not, I can send it on over there. But you're right. It should be coming to a head here pretty soon on exactly what's what.
Was our little county's effort the reason for the formation of this possible statutory fix, or were there other problems in California that were already going on?
There's always been a definition issue throughout the state. It's always been, yes, you have 201, no, you don't, 224, 201, that whole thing. And this Chapter 13 Task Force has been meeting for probably 2.5 years, maybe. So it's been a long time. But what happened is the Attorney General's opinion just came out, and it fast-tracked the decision because it basically gave the parameters for this committee that you know, no matter who's on their opinions, it doesn't really matter. It's Attorney General's opinion now. And so hopefully within a couple months, we should have an answer.
Well, thank you both, Chief and Tammy. I appreciate the dialogue and the perspective the question comes from is if the board does not vote affirmatively on next Tuesday to accept staff recommendations, then I think we are, as a county, left with, I think it's on the agenda, policy 350 and some sort of rotational system for emergency ambulance transport in the future.
Okay. Question? Yes.
Go ahead, Monica.
Mr. Powers, you mentioned having seen a letter that was sent from the county to the cities to clarify some of this. Tammy, is it possible for us to get a copy of that letter? I'd be interested in that if it comes within the purview of the committee. It would help increase my understanding. So if cities are confused, it sounds confusing for those of us that are coming in cold on it as well.
I can add it to the correspondence.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, moving on. Mike, OC Meds update.
Oh, he's going to talk about diversion, and then okay. I'll talk about OC Meds.
Very good.
All right, good morning. So in your agenda packet under attachment 2, you'll see the Orange County EMS diversion report, and this is primarily for the periods January 1st through March 31st of 2015. Page 2 through 4 are the percentages of time for emergency department diversion month over month, and the areas are broken down into geographical areas for northwest, central, coastal, and south areas. So that is the total ED diversion. As we know, we had a spike in January, and it's kind of leveled out since then. On page 5, there was a request that came out of the Facilities Advisory Subcommittee to also report that in the total hours of diversion time. So page 5 is the same information or data presented on pages 2 through 4, only in hours. At our last EMCC meeting, there was a request to report diversion year over year, month over month, retrospectively, so we have some comparative analysis. And so page 6 is just that. It's a total diversion hours for each month from 2012 through March of 2015. Continuing on, page 7 is the total trauma diversion hours. 8 is a percent of time for cardiovascular receiving center diversion. Page 9 is internal disruption diversion, also reported as percent of time. And then page 10 is CT diversion, also reported as percent of time.
Question? The spike in January, has there been any explanation behind that?
I don't think that we have an exact pinpoint of explanation. The volumes were consistent throughout the county, increased. And we don't have something pinned down as to the exact reason for that spike.
My best guess would be flu.
Yeah.
Bad flu season.
The flu, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Go ahead.
So how are we doing?
I think overall, you know, besides the spike that we had in January, the diversion has come down overall. If we look at from 2012, 2013, and we kind of leveled out in 2014. So our diversion time overall has gotten better. We'll see how we progress through the remainder of 2015 and continue to work with the facilities and administration to keep an eye on it.
Contributing factors?
I think one was the flu, as you heard, from January.
For the improvement, uh-huh. What are we doing that's helping to improve it over time?
I think reporting on it and bringing awareness to it, reporting it in percentage time, has seemed to help understand and provide some perspective as to what it means to go down and how much time that is for a facility. And so there's a lot of efforts within facilities to improve throughput and get patients moved out of the emergency department and into the
observed
the
behavior, huh?
Yes.
Great, thank you.
Chief Tommy.
Quick question. Wall time, I know in L.A. County it's a big issue. Are we measuring that anywhere, looking into that, Tammy, at all? for medics at hospitals, waiting for a bed type of thing?
At this time, we're not. We're keeping an eye on diversion, and we've talked about this later last year. And Orange County is one of the few counties statewide that doesn't have a chronic wall time problem. Certainly, there are outliers, and we hear about them, you know, a couple times a month where an ALS unit had to sit on a wall for 30 minutes, maybe a little bit longer, or a BLS unit had to wait on the wall. But those seem to be rare. So we're not even trending it at this point. We may consider doing it at the end of the year if this diversion, if these diversion hours continue to, as we compare them to 2014 and 13, if they are percentage-wise a lot higher than they were, then we're going to consider looking at wall time, because that's probably if diversion is increasing, wall time's probably, well, transport time and wall time's increasing too, which we know has a huge system impact on the first responders and the transport providers. So it is something that we would consider, but at this time we're not looking at it.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, I do have a question. I do believe there's a bill going through right now in California that possibly will require the measurement and analysis of wall time. So I would encourage Orange County EMS to look into that. In my discussions in the industry for transport providers, they are looking for solutions that may be viable for them, depending on how it's viewed by the counties. I'll refer to the ambulance rates in one example as far as the standby time that's approved. I do have a question for the agency regarding the diversion policy, and it is, what is a reasonable amount of time as defined in policy that a handover of patient care should be expected from the industry?
From my knowledge, it is not defined in the diversion policy or any receiving center policy. And there's a big report out that was co-sponsored by California Hospital Association and MSAC in looking at ways hospitals can improve their throughput and then therefore decrease their wall times. And it included ways in which not just how to improve it, but also how to monitor it and then define the time intervals, because that's probably one of the biggest things that needs to be teased out is when do we start the clock and when do we stop it. So at this time, we have not established in this county what the acceptable time is.
Okay. You know, I've done a little research into this, and I've seen some providers, even in other countries such as Canada, that are faced with similar problems. And eventually, if the facilities can't tease out their throughput, it has an effect on the transport provider's business bottom line, because they have resources they can't use due to prolonged wall times. I'm only speaking of examples that I know of that I've done research in Canada, but I'll refer to the ambulance rates today and possibly even present it as a question to the agency as the intent of the standby time that's specified in the rates that we'll discuss later, because I know that ambulance providers are looking for solutions in order to improve their operation. In discussions in industry, there is a reasonable amount of time that there should be for the proper transfer of care. It could be somewhere, you know, half an hour. But after that, is it appropriate for an ambulance transport provider to consider charging standby time to a facility that can't seem to improve their throughput? And so this question about diversion, I think, is very relevant, and as industry looks for solutions, and the county is offering within this particular approved calculated rates that providers are allowed to charge for this, specifically 911 providers, I think industry might start looking at this as an option to help cover their cost. But it will have a negative effect, because I'm sure our partners in the hospital association would definitely have an opinion about this. So it's an issue that we definitely need to be mindful, not only from a statutory perspective that we have a new bill that may cause the LEMSIS to start modifying this and overseeing this, but also there could be financial implications.
Through the chair. One of the thoughts is, if there's not a standard or a regulation, then there is no benchmark. And I know for the transport providers, the standard, there are several standards, one of which is the response time. And so the idea potentially of establishing through receiving center approval of a standard for acceptance of patients by ambulance would be a good thing to explore. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gilley.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think this is a very good discussion. I mean, clearly there are issues and things that need to be explored here, but the issue of diversion and the proper transferred timing of when a patient is accepted and things, it's a more complex issue than just a hospital managing throughput. Throughput is a factor, and hospitals work all the time to figure out ways and processes through which they can improve their throughput. But there are other factors that also cause emergency rooms to become congested and things, and they are beyond the control of the hospital. They have to do with how quickly managed care companies can arrange for transfer or transport of a patient when that's determined to be the course that the patient's insurance requires. Sometimes that's not done in a as timely a manner as it needs to occur. We have situations where there are involuntary psychiatric patients which are held in the emergency department. We had a fairly lengthy discussion, the last two meetings, about processes to try and improve that situation here in Orange County through the development of a augmented crisis stabilization emergency service here for the county. It's not only just those psychiatric patients. There are also patients that come into the hospital that are developmentally disabled, which the county youth behavioral services doesn't want to deal with, which the ETS doesn't want to deal with. They don't deal with them. They are referred over to the regional center, and hospitals are left to their own devices to deal with the regional center, who doesn't always timely place and deal with patients for whom they are responsible. So it is a multifaceted issue, and it's not one that is simply answered by charging a fee to the hospitals if they go over half an hour or whatever it is. That's not going to be the answer to the problem. It's going to be a one through the entire system of being able to look at and look and see what improvements, what things can we do that might improve patient safety and quality of the service that we are all collectively providing.
Thank you. I want to thank the committee members for all their comments regarding diversion. I'm sure this will continue as a hot topic. The agency will continue to monitor this, and I'm sure they'll take our comments under advisement. Due to limited time, we will have to move forward to the next agenda item, which is OC Meds update.
So I'm going to put my Laurent Rupass hat on and just let this group know, OC Meds is fully 100% in a positive direction. Everything is going great. We have the next generation of Nemesis patient care report software about 80% complete, and we're ready to get it tested in the next 4 to 6 months. This is a huge deal for the electronic patient care record, and it is really a revamp of our current OC Med system. And it's not because our system wasn't good. It's so that the data language will match the hospital electronic patient care record. Another good thing about the upgrade is that it allows for it's device agnostic, meaning that it doesn't matter what type of tablet, device, iPad, Android, or whatever it's called that you use. It's compatible with different types of devices. With that said, I think at the last meeting it was announced that we received a $75,000 federal block grant, which we're going to use that to purchase 116 iPads that will be distributed to public and private EMS providers who choose to participate in the transition of Nemesis 3. So there's a multidisciplinary group of public and private providers who have sat down, discussed the types of devices that they wanted to purchase, and it came down, looks like, to the iPad. And in the next week or so, there'll be a distribution letter going out. Another announcement is that the OC Meds Hospital Hub is replacing the existing hospital dashboard. Training is going on at the hospitals. This is also related to the implementation of this next generation Nemesis EPCR. That's expected to go live on May 12th, and the existing dashboard will be discontinued a week later. There is also, we've received a funding from the Public Health Emergency Preparedness FEP grant to add what's called an EMS Health Information Hub. And it's much better that when Laurent maybe comes back to this group, and then maybe in the next meeting or the following, to provide an illustration, because it's highly technical. But suffice it to say that this EMS HIE hub, and HIE is Health Information Exchange, will allow OC Meds to talk to this HIE hub, and then the HIE hub speaks to a public health information organization. And in this county, it's called OCPRIO. And right now, OCPRIO has links to over 20 hospitals and facilities. So rather than OC Meds trying to build bi-directional data links with 25 separate emergency or acute care hospitals with emergency departments, it is much better for us to group our data exchange from hub to this OCPRIO. So this is a huge it's a huge project, and I'm really excited about it. And I wish I could explain it better, but a picture is worth a thousand words. So we'll bring that back to the group and with Laurent, so he can answer the detailed questions. So that's it about OC Meds, and I have not received any written EMCC correspondence to add.
Thank you.
I have a question in regards to OC Meds. I understand that Laurent's not here, so I won't make my questions too high level. I'm very familiar with the OC Meds system. I sat on the RFP panel for OC Meds years ago when I worked for the agency, and I've stayed very close to OC Meds. I did recently see how the board had approved $150,000 for that integration into OCPRIO, so I'm very excited. Tammy, just from a high level, does integration into an HIE for OC Meds enable essentially the field provider to share information with other health providers within the community?
It has the potential for that.
So.
You mean, wait a minute, say that again?
No, I think you and I are on the same level. It has the potential. So I'm thinking kind of like with mental health issues, you know, where we maybe encounter someone within the field who's having mental health issues, we're able to pull up their records from the cloud, HIE, able to facilitate getting our information as far as our medical assessment back to someone who can make a better appropriate determination as to the final outcome of a patient. It empowers us to, in real time, collaborate and communicate with other health providers within the community, regardless of who they may be, as long as they participate with the cloud.
The technology exists, but there's a lot of nuances with privacy and behavioral health patients. Mm. So we are working, and it was actually $260,000 that we have to spend.
Wonderful.
And we are going, our EMS patients are first, and if it comes down to we're able to have the behavioral health piece fit into it, that's a possibility, but it's leaning towards they're probably going to have their own connection to, but the OCPRIO is the control point, but OCPRIO is the coordination point for that. So that's a couple years off, but
yeah.
Though we have been in discussion with our IT department on that.
Well, like you said, I saw on the board agenda, it looked as though, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it was $150,000 for an integration in Doc Prio, one-time deal with a little probably annual maintenance, but now the County of Orange and the EMS system using OC Meds is on HIE. Wonderful. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, let's move forward. Under EMC Advisory Subcommittee and Advisory Group Reports.
I'll take that unless the two chairs want to, and they can pitch in. Transportation Committee met on 2 days ago on the 22nd, and the major highlight, well, one of the highlights was an HCA behavioral health presentation that was related to the transport of LPS conservators, particularly if that papers are available on scene to substantiate the conservatorship, a 5150 hold is not necessary, and ambulance providers are not violating a person's right upon transport. So there was a little bit of discussion with the behavioral health representative to also maybe provide a brief, an education brief, to allow the ambulance companies to educate their providers on, you know, what does this mean when you're out in the field. So Jim is the chairman. Do you want to add anything else?
No, that was it. And it sounds like they're amiable to assisting the industry with that education component, which I think the industry would certainly embrace.
Very good.
Education and training met on March 4th. Discussion items were optional scope and also the naloxone pilot study for public safety and the potential possibly to expand the use of administration of naloxone by BLS personnel, and spinal motion restriction was also discussed. And Patrick is the chair of that. Do you have anything else to add?
No, thank you.
And then facilities and CPAC did not meet.
Okay. Any questions, comments from the committee? No? Okay. Under unfinished business, we have the appointment of our EMC officers for 2015. I believe for chair 2015, Chief Nabe has been nominated, as well as Vice Chair Nick and us. So we do need the committee to approve the new slate of officers.
All motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Anyone opposed? No? Well, congratulations, Nick.
Thank you.
Good job.
Go ahead. Yes.
Well, thank you very much, and I guess we'll be moving on. And thanks, Dr. Tom, for doing a great job this past year. Actually, more than a year, huh? Yeah. they got their money's worth out of you. So thanks for a great job, and appreciate all you've done. As far as the next item of business, new business, Tammy, you present those, and then we.
Yeah. So in your packet, there are I believe attachment 3. There are, the first bit, item is a City of Anaheim upgrading an ALS unit, and it's already been approved. There's a process in place to have ALS providers, you know, submit to us. It's not necessarily an application, but a justification for why they're doing something. That was submitted. It was reviewed by Dr. Stratton and approved. We bring it to this committee as an advisement item, and if there's any questions, I believe Anaheim is here to go over any, if there are any questions. But I think that the letter from Anaheim clearly articulates the justification and the rationale. So if there aren't any questions, we can move on to the next item.
I do have one question. Thank you. I think we trust our fire departments to provide the care necessary. I don't understand why they need to request permission. Could you explain that?
The short answer is because it's in policy 700. It's my summation that was put in there so that the local EMS agency, I mean, there's several reasons why that's important, because we need to know when things are added and when things are removed so that we can notify the system and we can make sure that the proper communications are in place and who's the signed base hospital. And there's a lot of coordination with that. But the other thing is to So it's mainly for coordination and tracking.
Okay. And in policy.
Yeah. And then, Tammy, also, years ago when we established a new paramedic resource, I'm not sure, it's been a long time, but I think somebody from the county came out and made sure that we had all the proper equipment. Is that correct, that somebody from the county comes out and signs everything off, or no? Because I think that's a long time ago, that's what they were doing. They would come out and, you know, make sure we had the correct monitors and the medications and things of that nature. I don't know if that still happens.
It happens if it's requested.
Through the chair. Does the policy require that this committee actually take action, or is this simply just a receive and file? Because I know in one of the letters it talked about a temporary activation until it was presented to EMCC, but if it's a receive and file, then that seems unnecessary. So could you explain why that occurs?
Other than this is how we've always done it. I have to think about that. You put me on the spot here.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You know what we could do, Tammy, is maybe we can agendize this, you know, the policy 700 for a later date. We can discuss it and see what's needed, what's warranted, if we need to come to this committee or things of that nature, and then that way we could all ask questions and speak to that.
Yeah, it'd be helpful. I need to review that policy because I know that there's language in there that relates to an ALS unit versus a PAU upgrade. There's a difference. And what does it mean when it's brought to EMCC? Is it to just review and approve? Or EMCC is an advisory committee to the medical director. So I think with this particular Anaheim one, because of the timing of the Anaheim needing to put this into place and the timing of EMCC, there was an approval already made prior to. So in that way, it made it essentially a receive and file for EMCC because it was already a done deal.
Understood. Thank you.
So no action on the just receive and file for all of these, or just the Anaheim one?
For all of them, but what we wanted to do was provide the information to this committee on the justification from the cities and our approval. I don't see Brea's in here, but here it is.
Yeah, it was in there. Yeah.
So.
And I think at any time that we could put new paramedic units, you know. EMS resources in place, it enhances the care to the community, and you know, whether it's public-private partnership or not, you know, it's all good for the community. And the only concern I think for this committee, or one of the concerns, would be if we would take units out of service, paramedic units out of service, because it would impact everyone and impact the base stations and the hospitals. So I mean, maybe when we discuss this an agenda item, We could maybe say, hey, if one is added, it's just receive and file. If one is taken out of service, then it would be board action. But I'd like to request it be agendized for the next meeting.
Yeah, I appreciate the dialogue. You know, I mostly asked the question because I couldn't quite understand why it was under new business as though we were going to take an action. I might recommend that we consider having a consent calendar as part of our also new business calendar in the future for the EMCC, because it could be something as simple as a consent item. If I hope it didn't hold the fire departments up in being able to deploy their resources. And that was also my perspective, is I know that we have more and more special events. The city of Huntington Beach soon will be celebrating the 4th of July with fireworks again, and I'm sure all of the cities providing protection all over the county need to implement additional resources whenever we have those type of events, because more advanced level practitioners are needed. And so I appreciate the dialogue, and I couldn't quite understand it, so thank you.
And so we're just going to go ahead and just receive and file all of these?
A, B, and C, and if anybody has any questions, the city representatives are here, but.
Great.
I'll move on to D, the annual ground ambulance service rates. It's that time of year again. There is a process in place for us to notify countywide city managers, fire, and ambulance providers of a proposed adjustment to the rates. There's also an established process. In your packet, I provided the notification to the managers and chiefs and ambulance providers, letting them know that this could be an opportunity for them to speak for or against this adjustment. There's also a table reflecting what the proposed rate looks like. Most of you have gone through this over the years, so you could probably you'll recognize the methodology, which is the percentage change in the prior year's CPI for LA, Orange, and Riverside, all items. Because we did not have a rate increase or rate adjustment last year, we've taken the rate adjustment calculation from last year and this year and added them together to come up with the, was it 2.2%? So what's also included in your packet is the authority behind this, kind of a history of the ordinance and how we, you know, how the rates have been set over the years, and then where we are now. With this BLS rate adjustment, it also adjusts the advanced life support maximum rate in the same proportion. So that information is included as well. So this will be brought to the June EMCC meeting for vote. At that time, depending upon whether or not the groups want to, OCFA and the Ambulance Association may present at that meeting to discuss these rates. So this is what we have come up with from program for EMCC to review, and it's essentially it is an increase in the rate.
Tammy, I do have one question. I remember a while back we received a presentation of the ambulance rates increase, and at that time, and maybe from the Ambulance Association, they could shed light on it. My understanding is we were one of the two counties in the state that, I mean, at the lower end of what we charge for our ambulance service. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, and so that if those two groups decide not to provide a presentation, I do have an ambulance rate survey that we do every year to compare the rates statewide. It'll show you where Orange County is.
Yeah. Seems like a good service for the price that is charged comparatively through the state.
One question on the rates. The ALS pass-through, in the documentation, it says that it's only for the OCFA cities. But I know that there was a memo years ago that Shelley Conklin issued that said cities other than OCFA cities that had adopted the county ambulance ordinance could avail themselves of that rate. Is that provision still available to those cities that are ambulance contract cities outside of the OCFA?
So, Ordinance 3517 is a model ordinance, and cities, non-OCFA cities, have the option of using that model into their own municipal codes. And if you look at their codes, it's for most part, it's a cut and paste, and they've just changed the wording from Board of Supervisors to City Council. They've literally just copied it. Some have decided to take parts of it, and which don't include the rates. So there's a few cities that don't, they may have adopted parts of it, but it's not completely all there. You started off by mentioning the ALS pass-through, and this really isn't the pass-through. This is the ALS maximum rate that can be charged. And this is the maximum rate that can be charged at the request of for transports at the request of public safety in those OCFA jurisdictional areas, excluding three cities. So your question about the other cities, they charge what they charge. Now, when we've done surveys to look to see what the comparison is, a lot of the cities are aligned with us, or they're aligned in that they increase at the same rate that the county increases, but when these rates were started, they might have been at a higher rate, so their rates are a little bit higher. But the rates are different in other cities.
Well, specifically, those cities that have delegated the rate setting to the county through the agreement, which there are some cities that have done that. Specifically, I'll give you an example, Garden Grove. Garden Grove, I believe, has delegated their rate setting, and they then accept the county rate. My question is if Garden Grove chose to utilize the ALS-approved rate, does their council have to take action, or would this rate, if approved by the Board of Supervisors, be automatically applicable to Garden Grove for ALS services? I did misspoke by using the term pass-through as opposed to the maximum ALS rate. That's what my intent was.
I don't believe so, but that's Tammy's opinion. It could be illegal, but we're getting into...
Sure. Appreciate that. Okay. I just wanted clarification. Thank you.
For the two cities that I'm the chief of, I know that the council would have to approve any kind of rate, rate increases or decreases, things of that nature. But I don't know about Garden Grove. I would assume so.
Just for the sake of continued conversation, I'm actually interested. Chief Kanabi, if you can answer, your city sets a rate for maximum ambulance transport?
No. What they do is if there is an ALS a fee or a BLS fee or whatever, any kind of fee, that would be a council decision, and it'd have to be approved by council within certain parameters.
Certainly.
And obviously it couldn't be any more than what's in county EMS policy, but they would set the rates if indeed they wanted to go that way.
Is that rate applicable to interfacility transport in your cities?
I don't believe it discusses interfacility transports. Traditionally, it could, I guess, I'd have to look into that because it's ALS accompaniment, basically. That's what the fee is for. And I guess it could be. It would never came up.
I asked the question because the section of EMS that I mostly participate in is the private sector doing interfacility transport, which is not 911 initiated, pardon me, it's seven-digit emergency. And the rate disparity between the proposed rate here, well, I don't have a problem with these proposed rates. I do know that there is a large disparity in the industry between providing 911 services and the rate allowable for charge and providing IFT services via seven-digit emergency call. It's just become more of an anomaly to me in regards to how we set rates within our community of EMS because the 911 patient seems to be getting billed the most, where if an ambulance provider has a contract with a facility located in the city of Brea, that patient may benefit from the same level and type of transport, but at a much lower cost than someone who activates the 911 system. And I'm trying to find some sort of equity between the two, and I just don't quite understand the system. There was no question there. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. So, what is the action item on this?
No action. Just homework for next meeting.
Perfect. Till the next meeting. Great. Okay. We come to any other comments? We come to the member comments here on other issues. Any members' comments? No? I do have one. I know Wednesday was Administrative Professionals Day, so I'd just like to thank all the administrative professionals I know here with EMS and then in all of our agencies. They do an outstanding job, and we talk about 911, we talk about hospitals, we talk about patients. None of that stuff would get done if it wasn't for the administrative professionals. So just hats off and recognize them for Wednesday. Thank you very much.
I do have one comment, I'll make it brief. I thank everyone for allowing me to have the opportunity to represent the 2nd District and share my opinions in regards to these agenda items. I feel as though this will probably be my last meeting. I won't be sitting here in my seat in June. I've been asked to resign by my board office so that they can have someone who they prefer in their seat for the June meeting. So this will be the end of my tenure on the MCC, and I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, and thank you so much for everything you contributed to the board, and obviously a lot of knowledge. You've been in the business for a long time and have a tremendous amount of knowledge, and we're going to lose that knowledge, unfortunately, and big shoes to fill. So thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
Chief, can we come back to, I don't know if it's appropriate during member comments, but we were talking about measurements, and I would like to just make the general comment that I'd like to discuss in the future the measurements that we were all discussing. We needed to move on as a result of time limitations. But the only way we can improve is to look at what we are doing. And we recognize there's always going to be factors out of our control. But if knowledge helps us, you know, having the input of Mr. Powers and from the Hospital Association, you know, those sorts of things are going to help our leaders keep Orange County as one of the best providers of emergency medical care in the country. And I'd like to encourage us to continue or to encourage that in the future. So adding additional measurements, I guess, is my point. Some of those topics we were talking about earlier, wall time and, you know, throughputs and that sort of thing. We have to acknowledge that there are different factors, but let's look at them and see what we can work on.
Maybe we could agendize that for the next meeting also and have Dr. Stratton.
I don't want to kill Tammy all in one meeting, but certainly in the future.
Since Dr. Stratton's not here, we'll create some work for him, I guess, right? Well, so next meeting, maybe we can agendize that, discuss it. And I know that the LEMSA, they have not enough people to do everything.
We appreciate everything.
Right. Yeah, so, Dr. Stratton might have an idea of what can be done, what can't be done based mm-hmm. on the staffing that they have. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can agendize that also.
Cool. Thank you.
Great. No other member comment? Oh.
Actually, I have a comment. This is a perfect use of your subcommittee facilities. So actually, I had written a note down that the next time we were to meet with facilities, part of our report would be to talk about what happened at this meeting. And because that's facilities is really one of the best forums for that discussion to take place. And we have a lot of metrics, and we have a robust data system that affords us very quick access to reports, but we just have to define those time intervals and we will bring it up with facilities.
Great. Who serves on facilities? I mean, I don't even know who's serving on the committees.
The chairman is Dr. Pete Anderson from Fountain Valley, and then I don't believe anybody here, but that facility is represented. There's base hospital representation, obviously hospitals, ambulance providers, fire ALS providers. So it's a multidisciplinary committee. It's one of the four subcommittees of EMCC. They're the committees that do, besides EMS, OCMS, do all the work and reporting for EMCC.
Great. So a periodic sharing of that data with the mm-hmm. with the committee, maybe. Mm-hmm.
And really this diversion reporting, that's where this started. Mm-hmm. It started with Mike, but it was discussed very thoroughly in facilities and how best we should present this data. What would you like to see? Do you want to see it in days versus percentages mm-hmm. versus hours, things like mm-hmm. that? So
cool. Thank you.
No other comments. That brings us to the public forum section of our agenda. Do we have any public comment?
We have two speakers, Stephen Wontropsky and Brian Jacobs.
Great. And if the speakers can limit it to 3 to 5 minutes, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Stephen Wontropsky, Mission Viejo. I was stunned to learn at last night's OCFA Board of Director meeting that some South Orange County cities were encountering response times for EMS services that were below a 50% average response time goal. All right, it's done. I was aware of a 65% problem, but now they brought forward to the public that in some places 50% is not even being met. The City of Dana Point, Board of Director, expressed continued concern on a lack of timely response to its city that, according to him, has been going on for years, 3 years, all right? And questioned why response time deficiencies were not provided before this date, yesterday, on what we would call a deficiency map, all right, displayed in the meeting. And the deficiency map is superb. It shows what areas of the OCFA were not getting their response time goals met. And they had different colorings, all the way down to red, which was below 50%, all right? Next, I've got to recall that in my attendance at EMCC meetings, that the OCFA has actually brought forward to this group here, and I guess to the public, even though not too much of the public attends these meetings, that its EMS model was the best in the world, all right? Come forward to last night. The new fire chief, Bowman, has stated that that model is not working and it needs to be changed. And in a simplistic fashion, what he's saying is that instead of having one paramedic on one unit and another one on another unit, we're going to have two on one unit, all right? So that cuts down the number of units coming to have to respond, number one, and then also cuts down the number of units that are going out of service. The next thing the OCFA stated was that they've talked with an ambulance company and that the ambulance company is going to provide that their unit, which drops off the patient to the hospital, with the ALS OCFA unit following, the OCFA unit will no longer have to follow because the ambulance company is going to return the OCFA paramedic to the unit and that unit won't go out of service. Now, I've got a couple of recommendations for consideration here. Here they are. One, and this is just for consideration, recommend that more OCFA firefighters be cross-trained as paramedics to cut down on the number of units going out of service. 90% of the calls are for EMS. B, have all the other fire departments provide to you a deficiency map, just like the OCFA did.
Mr. Montrose, we're running out of time. If you could just conclude.
Is this 3 minutes or 5 minutes? If you don't want to hear it, I got two more recommendations. If you don't want to hear it,
go ahead and just real quick.
Let's see. Require ambulance companies to have licensed paramedics on their own units, okay? So that they can transport the patients to the hospitals without the need for an OCFA paramedic to join them. And I'd also say encourage the OC EMS to inform nursing homes, skilled nursing centers, places like this, of the IFT-ALS program so we can improve hospital throughput. Okay, and encourage them to use it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The next speaker.
My name is Brian Jacobs. I'm the NAMI OC Government Affairs Chair. I'm not here at my position as the on the board of Mental Health Board in Orange County. I found out that the county had somehow included language for a 5150 hold that is not in the law. And they had included the words imminent and immediate in front of the word danger. And it was rather obvious to us that by including imminent and immediate, it actually assured violence, incarceration, or worse. And so I'm here to report that at Wednesday's meeting, Mary Hale came up to me and was very clear about the fact that they have removed those qualifiers from danger. Bad enough that you have to have dangerousness. And I want to also bring to the board's attention here that Welfare and Institutions Code 5150.05 states that one is to consider the historical course of a person's illness. And by virtue of that, it doesn't have to be imminent or immediate. So anyway, just want to bring this to your attention because I think it's a system-wide change. Somehow those words never should have been there in the first place. I've gotten actual confirmation from this about this from the Legislative Council in Sacramento. So, and lastly, of course, the only thing that emergency personnel needs to be concerned with is that all they need is a probable cause, which is a reasonable belief that someone may be dangerous to self or others. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. Any comments, board members? No?
At this point, our next meeting will be Friday, June 26th, 2015, at the hearing room here. And again, thank you very much, Dr. Tom, for your leadership. And Mr. Power, thank you so much for all you contributed. And at this point, if there are no other comments, we will remain adjourned until next meeting. Thank you.